Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, because of the type of show that we're doing today, we're actually going to forego the fun hypothetical question. It requires a lot of kind of setup and all of that. We are today going to immerse ourselves in the what if the Chris Paul trade actually gets to go through. And I feel like, for just about every Laker fan, this is the all-time what if, right? Like, if you were to ask a bunch of people if you could have one thing back or see how one thing plays out, this is the thing they go to.
Yes, of course. It's like a, man, it's a sliding doors moment, right? Where, like, what would, even beyond that year, that season, what would, like, this team would probably look nothing like what it looks like right now if Chris Paul's, like, I wonder how long the reverberation would be. Because it would sit, like, Chris Paul's still a, like, floor-raising, you know, good enough to be the guy who leads your team to the playoffs kind of guy. He was doing that with an OKC team that people weren't expecting to do that with.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I wonder how long it would have lasted, that impact on the franchise.
So we're gonna get into kind of the ripple effects, the ramifications of this entire ordeal, and who knows how long that might go for. We could go forever on that. That'll be the third segment. Second segment, we're going to talk about how that immediately impacted the Lakers. First segment, we're going to talk about just the shock factor. It's one of the absolute holy shit moments in the history of the NBA, just flat out. And it was also, you know, the holy shit factor was just multiplied upon itself zillions of times, because this was kind of the advent for a lot of people, myself included, of NBA Twitter, right? Back in 2012. And let's just first set the scene with how this goes down, right? So the Lakers were going to trade. They were going to receive Chris Paul. Powell was going to go to the Rockets. Kevin Martin, Luis Scola, and Lamar Odom, plus Goran Dragic, were going to go to New Orleans, plus that a 2012 first round Houston pick that was coming from the Knicks. That was quite the haul, first and foremost, I thought, for New Orleans. I didn't, you know, some of the rewriting of history, the way people go look back on this was in some way that the Lakers were just fleecing everybody. New Orleans did pretty damn well for themselves with that initial package. But just put me next to you as this happens. Just paint this room. Were you throwing things? Were you unsafe to be around? Because for me, I was probably not the safest person to be around as this happened.
Yeah, so I was coaching high school basketball practice, right? There was the NBA lockout that year, and so they had this really condensed off season. High school basketball had already started up. We were, you know, I don't know if we were in season yet, but we were definitely getting ramped up. And we would do this shooting game at the end of every practice after we got our practice in, our individual work in, just have a little fun. The coaches, we'd shoot with the kids, do basically a 3-point shootout. And one of my players, Edwin, I hope Edwin's doing well. Edwin comes running over me, coach, like, Lakers just got Chris Paul. I'm like, oh, what? Like, and I'm like, all right, tell me, like, what, who they traded. And so he tells me, I'm like, oh, wow. So they kept Bynum. They kept, you know, obviously Kobe, right? Like, oh, this is an interesting squad. Right. This is an interesting squad right here. And so I'm like, all right, I got to go. Like, my assistants would lock up for me. I wanted to, you know, go home and see what was going on. And I didn't know about Twitter at that point, right? It was still the era where you kind of go home to watch SportsCenter type thing, right? To experience a big transaction like that. And so I'm driving home and, like, report comes in like, oh, well, maybe it's not done quite yet. And then a little more. And then by the time I came home, that motherfucker was not a Laker. And, like, the whole thing disintegrated on my drive home. I'm like, no, like, and so, yeah, man, that was rough. I could barely process it, right? I was, like, standing in front of my TV by the time I got home, just stunned.
So, yeah.
How about you, man? What was your,
I was also coaching, and again, you know, given the situation and the way I felt, I was even more of a fan back then. So this was, you guys think you've heard me angry and stuff. You guys haven't really seen the true just insane fan, Anthony, that existed at one point. And so we're coaching, and it was one of those kind of preseason tournaments that you have to play. This was, I think, my first year coaching, too. And one of the rules that I was the JV coach, so one of the rules that the varsity coach had in place was no talking, right? When Paul was first traded to the Lakers, I said, let's forego that that rule for a bit. You know, on one hand, I could pretend to be a player's coach. I also wanted to talk to my assistant coach about the trade.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of heard that hustle and bustle in the back of the bus from everybody who was kind of paying attention to this. And you're hearing, you know, coach, you believe this? I said, it sounds pretty good. And I'm talking to my assistant, and I'm saying, hey, this looks like they still have enough to be able to trade for Dwight. And it turns out I wasn't the only one who had a problem with that, right? That was right. One of the things that some executives around the league had a problem with. And so, you know, we start out, we were literally just pulling out of school when this happened. And then we got the next notification where it was like, no, hold up a little bit. And for one thing, as soon as they said hold up, I said, oh, shit. Because that never happened. Usually, yeah. When something leaked, it was done. It was not going to be a conversation anymore. And I was like, this probably isn't going to be good. And it took about, if I remember correctly, this is all by memory, it took about a half hour, if that, for Chris Paul to now no longer be a Laker. The trade is vetoed. And I believe fairly shortly thereafter, or was it done the next day when he was sent to the Clippers? Or was that all
the same day? It was like a day or two later. Yeah, no, yeah. It wasn't all the same day.
Yeah, it felt like it. It was all a blur. And anyway, so I started out the trip by saying, all right, we can talk. We'll lax on this a little bit. And then it was vetoed, and I was like, y'all better shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear from anybody. I'm just going to sit here with my headphones in and try to research what the heck just happened. And yeah, that's kind of where I was. And yeah, I mean, it's wild the way that this all went down. You know, I'm reading here from ESPN. Chris Paul tweeted out, wow, and was apparently ready to sue the league. Right. And it's kind of interesting to think about from his perspective. He now became one of the first and foremost voices in terms of player agency and making sure that never happened to him again. I would imagine this played a role in that. I remember Lamar Odom out here. He also tweeted out, you know, if a team trades you and then it gets rescinded, now what, right? He was shortly thereafter sent out to Dallas and his career. Maybe his entire world was never the same.
Bro, do you remember that interview with, I think it was Stephen A. Smith?
It was brutal.
Like, he was so sad.
Yeah.
He was so sad, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was, there was no way, like, after that was, there was no going back, right? Like, there was no way of, like, oh, it's just the same as it was before. And, right. Like, yeah. And they traded Lamar for, you know, for pennies on the dollar, really, because they knew, you know, he was, so they got a trade exception from Dallas and I think a late first.
It turns out that Dallas probably regrets the trade, right? Because he never really was Lamar Odom for those guys. And actually, if this trade, actually, let's actually take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to get into the immediate. What happens if it gets done? What happens if they never go down this path? They never try to trade for Paul in the first place. We'll talk about that here in a bit.
Today's episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast is brought to you in part by MyBookie. Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched and pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. Stay sane and entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. It doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to stop thanks to MyBookie. Video poker, not your thing, but still need a fix? They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right, they have professional dealers at their tables live on site 24/7. Your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? Don't even sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of the shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like this. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to receive a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit, and you can claim the extra funds all the way up to $750. Again, promo code is LOCKEDONNBA to activate this offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid. So we talked about the immediate holy shit kind of moment, in which case you and I were both around kids. It was probably good that, you know, I was in a public setting. I wasn't going to enact, I was not going to kind of set a tone. This was probably heading towards one of the first, like, official games that was going to count on my record.
Sure.
So, let's just say my head wasn't quite in the game as we pulled up to the school, wherever it was that we were playing. And you know, fortunately for you, practice was over. So, you know, nobody wound up running suicides because of David Stern being a jackass.
Right.
So let's talk. I want to actually just really quickly head down the path of, like, because if the Lakers knew that it was going to get vetoed, they probably never really try to leak those details in the first place, right? So let's say they never try to trade for Chris Paul. How do you think things go from there?
Oh, man. So that team had just gotten waxed by Dallas. They'd gotten swept in four games.
Bynum on their to kill J.J. Barea.
J.J. Barea. Yeah. 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 And it was very much like from behind the 3-point line. It was kind of,
yeah,
it was kind of an early, like, new era of basketball starting to bleed in. And it was very easy to, before Dallas won that championship, it was very, difficult to argue that you could win with these small ball,
yeah,
type of 3-point shooting lineups. It was always, the argument was always like, oh, it's going to fall apart in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You got to be tough and strong and this and that. And Dallas not only waxed us, they
boat raced.
Yeah, man. And they took out everybody. They won, mm-hmm, the title. They weren't supposed to win the title that
year. Beat the Heatles.
They did. And so that was, I think, kind of a shift in the league. I don't think the Lakers would have won another title, mm-hmm, if they kept that group together. I think that was the right, like, path
time to make a move.
Right. To especially, like, Chris Paul was a 25-year-old superstar.
Yeah.
We can get into kind of the, like, I feel like Chris Paul's kind of a floor raiser, but a ceiling lowerer, I guess. In that, like, he's going to win you, you're going to win 40, 45 games with Chris Paul on your team, no matter what. How significant can he be on a title team? Can he be your second option? Mm-hmm. If Kobe's your number one, you know, and you have another ball handler. Yeah. That's something that can, you know, that's, I'm curious if Chris Paul can be that guy. Like, I don't think James Harden is good enough to be the number one with Chris Paul as his second option as a two, but I do think Kobe is,
yeah,
and or was. So, like, it was the right path to go down, but because I think that Lakers team's time had kind of come and gone.
Yeah, I would agree. I remember knowing that team was just done when, mm-hmm, Phil lost his shit and started pounding Powell in the chest. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Where, yeah, it was like a timeout or something like that.
Like,
or
an wake up, man, wake up.
Right, yeah, right. And that Powell needed to be woken up, and that Phil was losing his cool in a timeout like that. That signaled to me, all right,
This is it for these guys. And then, you know, obviously it ends with Bynum trying to murder J.J. Barea, ripping off his jersey. It was done for those guys. And so, yeah, it just so happened that this trade wasn't just perfect from a personnel standpoint because, you know, Paul would have really helped Kobe, I think, on the back end of his career. If they are able to still trade Bynum and some picks and some change to Orlando for Dwight, then that might further Kobe's career. But that was at least in theory, right? Mm-hmm. We can get into whether or not we think that trio would have meshed, you know, chemistry-wise here in a second. But yeah, that was a perfect timing-type trade on top of it being a perfect personnel-type trade to be able to reset and try to give Kobe another chance at it after having won those back-to-back championships. And, you know, that was always kind of the biggest bummer to me was this – it felt like ended Kobe's career, right? Like it felt like he was now going to have to go back to this team that was essentially broken in terms of chemistry, had been run off of the court, not just in terms of the three-point shooting that Dallas had, but they just looked old and tired. And you looked at it like, all right, well, Kobe won those five championships. I guess that's okay, right? You started to talk yourself into it. Mm-hmm. I do want to get into, let's say – because remember, I think it was Mark Cuban who was the loudest GM about it. And I know Dan Gilbert also raised concerns with the Comic Sans letter. And let's say the Lakers do trade for Chris Paul. They do move Bynum for Dwight Howard. Knowing how things go with Kobe and Dwight, do you think it's a multiplication effect where it really doesn't go well with Dwight?
So I was thinking this. Yes. Yeah. So like we're saying, like, if we've got Chris Paul in the picture too, is that
yeah,
what we're saying?
Yeah.
So yes, I was thinking exactly this before the show, in that I think Chris Paul's a guy who like grates on people, like in teammates.
I don't
anyway.
Think you have to say I think.
Right. and Kobe could do that too. Mm-hmm. And Dwight Howard thought he knew it all, right? And so it's kind of like two generals, which isn't really maybe a great idea either.
And this really reluctant lieutenant.
And a guy that wants to be a general but is closer to, you know, a soldier. Like, he's a guy who's not going to lead, follow, or, you know.
Right.
Or which they'll say lead, follow, get the hell out of the way. He's not going to do any of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if those personalities mesh well. I think Dwight would have gotten real tired of them really quickly. I think
either it works or Chris Paul and Kobe both murder and get rid of Dwight's body.
Sure.
I think Kobe and Paul would have worked fine because I think they, brainwaves wise, they approach the game and they approach success, I think, in some of the same ways.
So that's the thing, right? Is like, it could work beautifully, right? Like, if they could get on the same page personality wise, you've got like the point guard, the dominant wing, and the rolling big.
Yeah.
All three are really good defenders, defenders,
yeah,
right? So like, that would have been like, Phil would have been the guy to coach that, right? Because there's all the personality issues.
Yeah.
You can get those three dudes getting along and on the same page. But I think that would have been
a great point, because Phil would have been in charge there too.
Right. That's Phil's toughest chance. Anyone could do it, it would have been Phil.
Yeah. No, I think that might be the point that really hammers home. I think they come closer to reaching their kind of peak than like the 2012 Dwight Mayer year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that they still have Phil. Although, did Phil retire right after those playoffs? I don't think he coached again that next year.
In 2011, when did Phil retire? I think so. Hold on. I thought
so
Phil
this was December 8th, 2012, that this actually happened.
Yes. So I think that was Mike Brown's first year.
Yeah. So maybe that's a disaster.
Yeah, maybe.
if they could talk Phil out of retirement, then I could see maybe that happening. But Mike Brown would have been so outmatched. He'd have been done. He would have been so screwed, and Dwight would have been murdered or whatever. So, you know, maybe not so much the immediate Lakers future it's not that it isn't interesting, but the ripple effects to me of this are what defines this as why everybody looks to this as not just maybe a Lakers-specific what if of all time, but a league-wide what if of all time. We're going to get to that here in a second. If I also remember correctly, this was around the time, too, that we started to hear a lot about Dwight being kind of a joke, seen as a mm-hmm. bit of a joke around the league. Mm-hmm. So maybe Kobe and Paul kind of play into that and say, hey, man, you know, this is how a lot of people see you. Maybe Dwight didn't want to hear it from Powell or a broken down Steve Nash, but with Chris Paul being something closer to a peer, Kobe being, you know, having that kind of older voice, maybe some of that, it makes that a little easier for Dwight to figure out or whatever. But if it was indeed Mike Brown who was tasked with this, I don't think that goes over very well. But yeah. If we, you know, one part of the reason why this is looked at as a bit of a, you know, a favorite for conspiracy theorists, the league at that time owned the New Orleans Hornets. They were having mm-hmm. a really hard time selling.
This is bullshit. Sorry. You haven't even asked me yet. Yeah.
They had a hard time selling the New Orleans Hornets. And it was weird how, oh, wouldn't you know? The New Orleans Hornets, who vetoes this trade and makes their way into the lottery. Wow! Anthony Davis? Who could have seen that coming?
Dude, if it didn't happen to the Lakers, it would be like the biggest scandal in NBA history. It was such bullshit, man. Yeah,
could you imagine there's no precedent to, like, the Spurs?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
Like, ah. Yeah, just there's no precedent for it. There's no way you can compare it. Like, you had Dell Demps running the team. That was the idea, right? Was that they would be, you'd like, they'd stay out of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But basketball reasons and all that bullshit, like, it was scandalous, man. If it happens to anybody but the Lakers, it would have been huge scandal. But it was Lakers, so, you know, all 29 other teams were like, ah, you know, serves you right. But it was complete nonsense.
Now, I forget specifically whether it was the Knicks pick that got the no, because the Knicks pick didn't even go to New Orleans. It was New Orleans' own pick that got them Anthony Davis, right? Mm-hmm. So if you really want to go down this path you say, okay, the reason why this wound up being a good no trade for the Hornets was that they knew that if they bottomed out, Anthony Davis might be coming, and there was no way for them to get a piece that would have that kind of longevity moving forward. Of all the guys that were going to New Orleans, I think only Powell is still in the league, and he's getting ready to retire, right?
Right, yeah. That's almost 10 years ago, man. That's crazy.
Actually, Goran Dragic is still in
the league. Of
course. Mm-hmm. So if you're making the case from New Orleans' standpoint as to why David Stern was right to do that, seeing as he was somebody who, in a way, potentially, might oversee the lottery balls just happening to fall in that direction, then okay, you know, if you want to play into the conspiracy and say that was the right call for the NBA or for the Hornets or the NBA by extension, because they needed to sell the Hornets at some point, then sure. But let's say the Lakers trade goes down, Chris Paul goes to the Lakers, and from New Orleans' standpoint, that means Anthony Davis is not in New Orleans for that amount of time. And he goes to a team that isn't such a just incredible shit show for the first 7 years of his career, or six out of the first 7 years of his career. Maybe LeBron and Anthony Davis are not Lakers right now. Do you roll with me in terms of those just kind of direct, those are the most, I think, direct ripple effects to current time NBA situations?
Yeah, we might be getting to the end of that ripple effect, but like very rarely in the NBA do things reverberate for that long.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, so Kobe gets older and let me think of it just through the Lakers view.
Yeah.
And so Kobe gets older and Chris Paul's starting to enter his prime, right? So mm-hmm. Kobe becomes more of this kind of like Jordan in the last 3 years of his career. This like, but can he do that in a league that's trending toward 3-point range? Maybe Kobe becomes more of a shooter. I don't know. And maybe Kobe doesn't change who Kobe was because that's who Kobe was. Right. And that's probably likeliest answer to this. Yeah, but I feel like if Kobe was playing for something, he always had a way of adapting his game.
Especially later in his career.
Right, right. And so I think he would have done that. I don't know, though, what kind of guys would you have needed to put around aging Kobe and prime Chris Paul to win a title?
Well, I think you would have needed a floor spacer in the front court, mm-hmm. right, to give Chris Paul and Dwight Howard the room to run their pick and roll together. I think you would have needed a defensive wing, a 3-and-D type wing, to help Kobe on the perimeter because Paul was not big enough to ever help, you know, in kind of switchy situations. Though he is pretty good at not getting posted up because he's such, you know, a bulldog down there. But but he still isn't somebody who's going to help on LeBron, right? And that was the direction that the league was going in was – you need to have somebody on your team who LeBron has to think about even a little bit. And maybe Kobe was that guy for stretches when the moment called for it, but that was not going to be Kobe for the entirety of the time that he played with Chris Paul. So they would need somebody like that. I think those are their two top priorities there. And then from there, you know, you round out your bench. But do you agree with the two kind of types of players that you would go with? And do you think those kinds of players were available?
Yeah, oh man, it's so hard to know like what the free agent market was and what the trade market was back then. But yeah, I do think that could have been a very interesting like early small ball team if the Lakers went in that direction. But again, like
that wasn't what the time called for.
right. Like that would have been nice, but that's not what, especially like part of the reason why D'Antoni didn't work is that the best guys didn't believe in that style of play. Mm-hmm. And like, there's no reason for Kobe in 2012 to have done that. That's kind of why
I ask if those guys would have been available, right? Not necessarily any name specifically, but would the Lakers have known that they need a floor spacer in the front court, that they need, you know, somebody to be able to space the floor from the wing spot too, right? Because if they don't get those kinds of players, like if you basically put you're that time stereotypical power forward, right?
Right.
League average, stereotypical, prototypical power forward next to Dwight on that team. And then you also don't have a small forward who spaces the floor. I really don't know if that team works out. I don't really know if that team works well enough offensively. They probably do defensively. They're probably really good defensively. But I don't know if that team works offensively well enough. Especially considering some of the offenses that were playing at that time. That was the Spurs that wound up beating the Heat 1 year. That was the Mavericks that had just run the Lakers off the court. Obviously, the Heat themselves were this dynamic. That was the beginning of the positionless basketball. Could the Lakers have known what direction that the league was going in to be able to put the right lineups around those three guys? I would probably say they don't. Knowing what we know about the Lakers as an organization and the struggle it's been to modernize, I would say they probably don't figure that out.
I think that's probably the case, especially because that probably means there's not the shakeup in the front office. Mm-hmm. I think you probably need to hit on a couple of late first rounders around them, like cheap seventh or eighth guys, right? Yeah. Like with the 26th pick in the draft, like, hey, that guy can play a little bit and he's a Shannon Brown type of guy.
But even then, do they have the first rounders to do that if they trade for Dwight?
That's true. I think they do because they didn't give up. Like, part of the problem was they gave up those for Nash too, right?
Yeah.
And they'd still have them every other year, right? Mm-hmm. I think there were paths to it at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, Kobe's not that old at that point. Chris Paul's entering his prime.
Yeah.
So I think they could have, but I think they would have needed. Yeah, they would have needed a big like a who could space the floor and defend, I think, which is kind of a weird combo at that time. Like,
yeah.
Kevin Garnett would have been great, right? But if Kevin Garnett would have been great for anybody, right? But that type of big, I would have really liked to see that kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, because I guess the quote-unquote floor-spacing bigs were the Luis Scolas of the world, right, who weren't particularly great right. on defense either. So he was kind of one or the other at that time. We didn't really know how important it was to have 3-and-D, not just from the wing, but also at the four spot. If this goes through, this means the Lakers don't have LeBron and don't have Anthony Davis right now, I think. Because the Lakers wouldn't have bottomed out the way that they did.
But maybe that makes him more attractive. I mean, like, maybe LeBron comes and... I mean, no, he probably goes back to Cleveland. But, yeah, maybe that's a... Maybe that LeBron comes and... isn't coming alone in 2018, right? Like, there's something that's stayed consistently good.
I guess LeBron and Chris Paul might have wanted to play together. So let's say Kobe retires, right? Say entering Chris Paul's age 28 or 29 season, and maybe at that stage, LeBron is interested in coming and playing for the Lakers alongside Chris Paul. I don't know if he would have been interested in playing with Dwight at that time, right? Because Dwight's name didn't carry much weight around the NBA at that time because of the experience that the 2012 Olympics were. Remember, he was called a straight up joke from a lot of the top dogs in the NBA at that time. So, you know, I think maybe Dwight gets shown the door and LeBron enters to play next to Chris Paul. But then again, if Anthony Davis isn't with the Hornets, maybe he goes to a more stable organization. You don't have Anthony Davis and LeBron playing nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, at that stage, if you have LeBron and you have Chris Paul, after you just had Kobe and Chris Paul, that makes for a more viewable experience, a more tenable experience, viewing experience for Laker fans over that stretch, where instead they tried to bottom out, they tried to rebuild through the draft. So it's kind of different versions of different scales, maybe, of success. I don't know if that Kobe, Chris Paul, Dwight Howard team has the ceiling to be able to win a championship. And then you got to hope for a lot of things to go right for LeBron to show up. And then that team might have championship aspirations with LeBron and Chris Paul. But I don't know if they're as good as they are now. So do you trade? Yeah, I'm reluctant to use this term right now. More of a flattened reverse curve, where it's not you fall off a cliff and then you rebuild yourselves back up to where the Lakers are right now. You have more of a gradual decline and a more gradual, you know, incline to rebound. But, you know, it's a different situation altogether. Which of those would you have preferred?
I would have liked to stay consistently good. I think the Lakers are a franchise that doesn't like, and it's funny, you and we both, and you a few years before I started in the tanking years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this was Team Tank once upon a time, right?
This was the Team Tank pod.
The Team Tank podcast once upon a time.
Yeah.
I think the Lakers are one of the few teams that doesn't need to do that. Because of their attraction, how attractive they are to big time free agents. I think part of the reason that there are a few reasons, but part of it is that, like, we just weren't attractive to a big time free agent. Like, we don't have to be a great team in order for really, really, really good players to come here. We won like 35 games and LeBron was like, yeah, I'll go there. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't think that I would have rather stayed consistently really good, because I do think that there's one move here, one move there, some guy becomes available, you got a nice big expiring contract here that you can move for this guy who wants to become a Laker, you know, like the Lakers team history is full of moments like that, where even if they're not quite good enough, like that we kind of posited a moment ago, they're also not that far away.
Yeah.
And one move can get you there. So I would have rather gone that route. How about you?
I think I agree. The other thing that needs to be pointed out here is this current brain trust worth it enough to you? Because if they go in that direction, they land Chris Paul, they don't have such a crazy bottom out, you probably still have... Which bus am I forgetting? Why am I blanking on this?
Jesse?
No. Is it? No. No.
What, for the defenders or?
No.
Or Jim Bus. Oh, Jim Bus.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going insane. I'm telling you.
You've got a great Jim Bus story too. And
I do. You can't tell it,
but it's a great story.
Twins, dude. Twins. Anywho. Jim Bus is probably still in place right now. Mitch Kupchak is probably still in place right now. Does that change your answer, your previous answer a second ago at all?
I don't know if they are. Ooh, that's a good question though.
I think they are. Cause if they land Chris Paul.
That's one. This one thing is so, yeah. Like, there are so many ripple effects from. Yeah, I mean, players win, man. Like, if it meant having Mitch and, like, us being good for all those years instead of being crap for 6 years,
yeah.
Like, I'm fine with that. Like, it's really the players at this point who are bringing guys here in a lot of respects. I'm fine with it. I'd rather have Palenka, but, I would take that. That's crazy just how many things it impacts, though.
Well, I will say this, though, to your point about players winning. Players didn't seem to respect the Lakers the way that they did under the way that they do right now under this current brain trust with the previous one. So I don't know. That's what makes this so insane is that there are so many ripples. There's this entire situation is so dynamic that I think it's impossible to just say definitively the Lakers will be better right now or they would have been better as things had played out the other way, right? There's no way to know. I don't think there's any way to know. And it's the kind of thing that can be debated until people turn blue till the end of time, really, until a lot of these careers actually play their ways all the way out. Knowing what Chris Paul has been able to do now in OKC after what he did as a Clipper and with the flashes that he had in Houston. Remember how close that team was to knocking off the Warriors? He was an incredible, incredible player. You know, a lot of people consider him the second best point guard of all time. If he and Kobe are able to get Dwight to mature in a way that we know Dwight was always able to mature, then we're talking about potentially one of the best, you know, big threes in the history of the league. But if that doesn't work out, or given how things have played out to this point, it's hard to feel too bad about where the Lakers are currently right now. And we don't know that they get here. So it's a fun one. It's a fascinating one. I'm interested to hear what I'm going to make it a poll. I think which way would you have preferred this to play out? Get
like
Chris Paul and then get this, you know, have this situation play out the way that it did, and see what people think there. This was fun though. This was fun. It's a maddening one to think about as it happens, but all the ripples and all the different dynamics of it are so much fun to try to figure out how they play off in different ways.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Crazy how many things it impacts.
I'm gonna stay up late tonight thinking about this. So I appreciate this being the subject that you chose as we got ready for the show.
Yeah, this is good, man. This is a good one.
All right. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe out there. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.